Welcome to Mac Voices, the talk of the Macintosh community. This is edition number 502. I'm Chuck Joyner, the editor of the Mug Center, and your host. In today's edition, we have the privilege of talking with the editor of the definitive resource for all things Quark, X-Ray Magazine. I'd like to welcome Cindy Schaffstall to Mac Voices. Cindy, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Cindy, some of our listeners may not be Quark users or heavy Quark users, so they may not be familiar with X-Ray Magazine. Tell us a little bit about it, how it got started, and what kind of things you offer.
X-Ray Magazine actually started in 1995 with another company that was a Quark Express Extensions distributor, and I assumed that company and its assets in 1998, but we retired the magazine because of the amount of paper that it consumed, and they weren't delivering all that they said they were delivering, so I was concerned about really just waste. So we put it on hiatus for 7 or 8 years for a while until we decided that with the relationship that I have with Quark that we could be assured that the vast majority of them would actually be delivered to people who were using Quark Express and who would read them.
So it's safe to say that X-Ray Magazine is back on track at this point.
Yeah, it's pretty safely back on track. We have 4 issues now under our belt. We're working on the 5th issue. All of these issues are dedicated, at least in part, to the new version that'll release at some point.
Cindy, are you a magazine that gets widespread newsstand distribution, or do most of your readers subscribe, or how does that work?
We don't do any newsstand at the moment. We have some partners who are considering, who we're considering having distributed that way, but we don't really think it's the best way to reach the subscribers. We do direct mail into the U.S. and into, I think right now we're going into about 16 different countries. And additionally, we do a PDF preview that's at our website where people can read some of the articles, not the entire magazine, as a PDF. And then the major Quark Express 7 articles are featured in French and, French and English and Swedish should be up any day now, and I think German is coming. So we're trying to reach other markets in their native languages as well.
Given that you don't have newsstand distribution and only PDF, what physical form does the magazine take? I mean, are we talking something that is put together with a staple, or are we talking about a nice glossy paper?
It's actually a very high-quality glossy magazine, 64 pages. We have so far limited the ad space to just house ads because so many of the writers have so much to say, and we end up fighting for space at the end of every issue. So it's pretty jam-packed with stories and how-tos.
And that leads into the next question about what kind of things is someone who is new to X-Ray Magazine going to find there?
X-Ray Magazine is slightly different than its previous iteration. Before, it was fairly well centered on just Quark Express, which is Quark's flagship product, but still not the only product they develop. We decided to take a different track this time, and we have sections on enterprise software and desktop software and Apple scripting, all things that are part of the Quark Express or Quark software users world, but maybe not necessarily just the core application. We really try to focus on workflow issues, and we want to keep them abreast of things that are coming down or coming toward them in the months and years to come, but also to make sure that they're learning a lot about the current version that they're using, even if it's not the current shipping version. Some people are still using Quark Express 4, and we want to make sure that some of the workflow issues that we discussed take into consideration that there is still an installed user base for the earlier versions.
So this is not just a tips and tricks magazine, but it really does focus on the entire workflow of producing something with Quark.
Yeah, it's definitely not a tips and tricks magazine. We have had a number of authors approach us about doing a tips and tricks session or a section in the magazine, and sometimes we include things that we think are nice tips, but we don't want to be considered that kind of magazine. We think it's much more important to make isolated Quark Express users aware of the technologies that are out there to help them in their job, and that's not always going to be a Quark Express extension, and it's not always going to be a Quark software product. Sometimes it's going to be something else, like Version Tracker was featured in our last issue, because Version Tracker can be a very important part of a typical Quark Express user's day, making sure that they have updated software, not necessarily Quark software.
If this is a fair question, what does the typical X-Ray Magazine reader look like? What kind of demographics or profile do they have?
Oh, my gosh. It's probably a designer or what we would have called in the old days a typographer or a typesetter or a desktop publisher, but even that's not fair to say. Quark has millions of users around the world, and a good cross-section might be pretty hard to come up with. We have some of the largest publishing houses as well. Definitely the largest publishing houses in the world are subscribed to X-Ray Magazine. In fact, I've had the privilege of actually hand-delivering those to a couple of those sites. So it's pretty overwhelming when I think about the names of the companies that read my magazine. It's very humbling.
Cindy, where do you see Quark going right now? Anyone that's familiar with its history in the last few years, especially in the Mac space, knows that it at least is perceived to have had some challenges, maybe not been quite as responsive. The fact that you brought the magazine out of retirement and that you seem to be doing very well with it would indicate that Quark is anything but dead, that it really is out there prospering.
Yeah, I think that anybody who's been around Quark for a while would definitely admit that they've seen their rocky road when it comes to customer service. And I actually also run the Quark Alliance program, and I've been doing that for about a year and a half. And when Quark approached me first to take over the Extensions Developer Program, and they told me, their marketing line about the new face of Quark, and they said, things are really going to be different. We really want somebody with your experience in the extensions market to reach out to our developers and to make them feel like they have a community within Quark and a voice within Quark. And I thought about what they said, and I happened to be at the Quark Summit over a year ago. And at the summit, there were more Quark shirts than there were customers, and I had never seen that. And I've been an authorized trainer of Quark Express since version 1.0. So I had never been to an event where Quark actually showed up in force prepared to help the customer. So I spent the 3 days at the event, and I listened to what they had to tell me about the developer program and felt like I could make a difference in the developer program, and that in the end, as a contractor, I really wasn't making that huge a sacrifice, that I could walk away from it. But after 6 months, there really was a new face of Quark. There really was effort at making the customers feel like they had that Quark cared about their software and about their workflow issues. So at the end of 6 months, when they asked me to take over the entire Quark Alliance program, which is the customer outreach program, and I felt like I could make a difference there and that it was in keeping with the new motto, the new face of Quark, I think that any customer who feels like Quark has alienated him, this is the time. This is the time for Quark to step up and take care of that customer and to show the customers that they are not the same company, that there's a whole bunch of new people here that really are customer service-based and who are listening. I'm one of them, but my whole team is that way. Everyone that works for me is very customer-oriented, and I deal with people in the Quark building all day long who feel the same way as I do, and it is a new thing. So I know they've been treated poorly, but I think that Quark has come around. And I'm looking forward to being a part of that. And that is the catalyst for X-Ray Magazine coming back, is that part of the problem that Quark had in ignoring the customers was that there was not a really reliable source for the information that they needed. They needed to know about new features that were coming up and other software products that Quark was working on and how to get help. And that is the place for the magazine, and that was one of the reasons that we brought it back. We believe that Quark is doing the right thing in customer service and that we wanted to be a part of that, and we felt like we could further that effort by bringing X-Ray Magazine back.
Cindy, given your relationship with the Quark Alliance, is X-Ray Magazine an in-house publication by Quark, or do you consider yourself independent and you just wear two hats, or how does that work?
X-Ray Magazine is actually owned by my distribution company, which is the Power Exchange. And the Power Exchange has been around for over a decade, and we specialize in selling extensions technology. The Power Exchange purchased X-Ray Magazine and the assets that went with it in 1998, so it is wholly owned by the Power Exchange. It's not to say that Quark does not have a voice in the magazine, because I am a team player, and this is part of the team. the Quark needs to be able to say to me, you know, we think that articles on that particular topic are not appropriate at this time, or we would really like you to focus on this sort of thing. But they do not have the final say. They just get to have a voice. And it's an important voice. If I were writing about anything else, I would want people who were the closest to that topic or to that object to be able to have a voice in what I had to say. And I think it's important here, too.
Well, given that Quark is one of those programs that has a culture surrounding it and a community surrounding it all by itself, you almost have to, unless you're going to become a pundit or sit in a second-guessing chair the whole time.
Yeah, nobody really wants to hear what I have to say, so I'm better off just editorializing.
Wait a minute. You're a magazine publisher, and no one wants to hear what you have to say. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, I just manage the writers. You know, there are a lot of people out there that know an extreme amount of about Quark Express, and they have really great ideas on articles. And they come to me. They come to me and they say, you know, I know a lot about the Quark licensing administrator, and I was wondering if I could write an article on it. And it's something I don't know a lot about. So I was really eager to hear these kinds of ideas and to see the great writing that comes out of the community.
And that leads us to that question. Where do you get your articles? Are they produced by Quark, or do you have an independent writing staff, or do you accept submissions?
We have one article a month that is always produced by somebody at Quark. It's called Factory Direct. Joe Capensacco has been writing that article for us. He's been doing a lot about the web tools that are inside Quark Express. But there are a number of people at Quark who have asked me about writing particular articles. This next issue, Trevor Allen has done just a really fantastic job of writing about composition zones in a way that I think everyone will be able to understand it and grasp the concept. And it's a tough concept to get across with just words. And then we have a lot of freelance writers who have been writing about Quark software products and Quark Express for years. And they come to me with ideas and they write articles. My staff here at Quark Alliance and the staff at the Power Exchange contribute articles, because Quark is really pretty much about all of us. We're all Quark Express users and have been for years, so we're in a good position to not just write about it, but also be technical editors on the stories that are submitted by other people.
Cindy, given your position and your involvement with Quark over the years, where do you see Quark going? It's under fire from a lot of its competitors, and we just talked about some of the challenges it has faced, and it sounds like it has turned the corner. I know we're seeing it pop up more at trade shows to be better represented. In fact, represented at all, it was definitely a step forward, but it's being well represented. What kind of sense do you get out of the Quark user community? Are they ready to abandon it? Are they ready to embrace it? How's that going?
Oh, it's a little of everything. You know, you hear it all. As you pointed out, just having a presence at the trade shows is unusual, and I can't tell you how many people at those shows will come up to me and say, I can't even believe Quark's here. And not only are we there, but we are there in force. And Quark sends me out to many of the shows just to answer Quark Express extensions questions, because that is a big part of the community and a big part of the challenges that people face are extensions conflicts or needs for extensions. I see Quark. I do have an unusual vantage point these days, and I really do see Quark as having, maybe for the first time in a long time, a very clear vision about where they're going. And these things impacted my decision about bringing X-Ray Magazine back. I wanted to be sure that I was, that I was attaching myself to the right rocket. I don't want to bring back a magazine and the huge expense of bringing it back, and attach that to a software that's not going to be here in 2 years. When they sat me down and showed me the features of Quark Express 7, it was the first time that I can tell you, I personally have been excited about the revision of a product. It's just hard after all these years to get too worked up about something that they're saying is going to come around. But I sat there and saw these features in action and was excited about it and thought, this is the right vehicle. I'm going to bring this magazine back, and I want to be a part of this future. So they're very clear about what their future is, and they're very clear about the features that are coming in 7 and the features that are beyond 7. They have a real clear idea about it.
Someone like you that has been with the community and came back to it that way and invested yourself that much, you must have been convinced.
I was definitely convinced. But it took a lot. And the whole marketing campaign, the new face of Quark, that really is what it was for me. It really was seeing new faces, new people at Quark, because I've been around for so long and saw a lot of the same faces, but those people have moved on, and they're hopefully in successful careers somewhere else, and they've been replaced by a new guard, and that new guard is excited about where Quark is going.
Cindy, a short time ago, you contacted me and asked me about letting the user group community know that you have a free offer out there for 4 issues of X-Ray Magazine. I'll ask you to tell the listeners about that and how it's available and how they sign up.
I'd like to just tell you why I came up with that first, if you don't mind.
Absolutely, that's fine.
I was at a trade show where Quark had a smaller presence than its competitors, and what I found was that people got caught up in the hype of other booths and never made it over to Quark. And it was really, for me, disappointing because I knew how many Quark Express users had to be at a show like this. And I wanted a vehicle for telling all these Quark Express users how wonderful 7 is and how many cool features are in it. And this is not a feature war. This is a whole new vision for a direction of a software, and I wanted an opportunity to do that. And when you're selling subscriptions, it's you're basically only going to get your message to somebody who wants to pay to hear that message, and I wanted an opportunity to give that message to people, even if they couldn't afford it, especially the student groups where, they might be living off their parents' money or student loans, and they really don't have the disposable income to go out and pay for a magazine. Even though we think our magazine is worth it, they just don't have the resources for it. So I was worried that people like that were maybe not getting the message. And we know that our next 4 issues are heavily laden with Quark Express 7 stories. So I was looking for a way that we could get that Quark Express 7 message out to everyone. And if that meant that I had to give the magazine away, that's what I was willing to do. So we reached out to people like you, to users groups and to student organizations and to our partners, and asked them if they would give our magazine to their customers or to their users or to their members. And if they would do that, we would pay to print them all. And they did. So we've had a really overwhelming response to this. And the message behind it is, I want you to hear about what's in Quark Express 7, and I want you to be able to use your Quark Express 6 well. So if I can do that by making another huge investment, and again, an investment because I believe that this is the right vision, then I was willing to do that.
Well, and you have, and I'm hoping that some people have already taken advantage of it, and that more will after hearing you explain the philosophy behind it.
It's literally been thousands of people in just the last week. It's been kind of unbelievable that that this many people really want to read about it. You know, we knew that there were millions of Quark Express users, and we knew that they were really hungry for information about the software that they're using and information about, am I going to make an upgrade next year, or am I going to make a cross-grade? And we felt like if they were armed with enough information that they could make a decision that was best for them. And it's not always going to be that Quark Express is the best product for their future. But we think that in most cases it is, and we just needed an opportunity to show them that.
Well, hopefully we contributed something to those thousands of people, and after this, maybe we'll contribute a couple thousand more.
You actually have. The users groups have been very active, and Quark Alliance has a new program for users groups, so we've really been able to reach the user community, and that's important to not just the magazine, but also to Quark to get that message across that they are not the same company.
How do the listeners who want to sign up to get the free issues go about doing it?
You have it at your website, do you not? For your
yes, there's a link on our website.
Okay. I'm sorry, I don't know what your URL is.
It's mugcenter.com, mugcenter.com.
Well, we would actually prefer that your listeners sign up there. You can, of course, go to xraymag.com, but we encourage you to do so if you'd like to download the PDFs and read about the magazine before making the decision. But we would like your readers or your listeners to go to your site because we want to find out how effective it is to reach out to members through podcasts and to reach out through members through the users groups.
And the other thing I want to make sure we say is that, unfortunately, because this is such a high-quality magazine, the costs of shipping do make it a bit prohibitive for you to send it outside the U.S. So the offer is good for U.S. Mac user groups only, and we're sorry about that. But as Cindy said, there is a PDF version available on the xraymag.com website that you can go and get a feel for and decide whether you want to commit some funds to buying it.
Well, let me add to that a little bit. It's not that we will not send it internationally. We most certainly will. But they have to pay the postage. I'll give them the magazine for free if they pay the postage.
Oh, that's terrific.
So it's $6 an issue to send internationally and $3 an issue to send to Canada. So you can get your subscription for free. You can still get your four free issues. You just have to pay the postage. And the PDFs are a preview PDF, except for issue one, which is the entire issue. But all the rest of the PDFs only have select stories in them.
Well, we will make sure the story gets updated on the Mug Center to accurately reflect that.
Yeah, we definitely want everybody to get it. And don't forget that we do have the French versions and other languages. It's the V7 articles that we've translated, and we have more languages coming. So if you have a membership that is in a foreign language, they may prefer to read in their native language.
Cindy, we certainly appreciate the support of Mac user groups, and we appreciate the time you've taken to come and talk to us about X-Ray Magazine. We want to refer all the listeners to the website, which is xraymag.com. Of course, you can visit the Mug Center to get the information on how to sign up, or we will have the link also in our show notes on the Mac Voices website. And we've been talking to Cindy Schaffstall, the publisher of X-Ray Magazine. Cindy, again, thank you so much. We will look forward to hearing back from you soon when there's more developments in the Quark world.
Well, we very much appreciate the opportunity to get our message out to your users, and thank you for allowing us to do that.
Guest that we've had on before many times, and we're happy to welcome him back again to talk about the second half of their 20th anniversary, is Charles DeVore of the Portland Macintosh Users Group, here to talk about Mac Camp. Charles, welcome to Mac Voices.
Thank you.
Charles, Mac Camp is back again. What can you tell us this time? We've talked about this before. This is really, truly an institution in the Mac User Group community.
Well, we've been going for a long time. Fall of 1985 was the first Mac Camp, and it was set up to share information and get everybody together that was interested in the Macintosh and spend quality time together that was not interrupted by telephones and things like that. This Mac Camp, we have a lot of exciting classes, and I'm really excited to be going this time. We have fonts in OS X class that's going to point out where you put all your fonts, what all those font folders are doing in your system. We have a digital cameras class that I've been begging people to do for about 3 years. So we've got one of the guys that used to work for one of the professional photo places and is now working for one of the local Mac shops teaching that class. And we have a local company, Wycombe, who are going to be bringing their tablets, and they're actually going to be giving a class on using the Wycombe tablet at Silver Falls. So that's going to be a real interesting one. Also, we have What's Your Mac Question? One of the local vice presidents of one of our companies that deal exclusively with Macintosh is going to set up a panel, and they're going to help people individually with their computer questions. And we have Customizing Tiger on Sunday morning, and that's also Customizing Panther, but they just thought giving it the Tiger name would add a little more oomph to it. And that's, you know, all those good things out there that you can do to bring extra qualities to your Mac that it didn't have before, like Tinker Tool, so you can tweak things. And then the last class that we have is a class that... An idea of mine grew about sharing information with PC users and making it easy to share information. So we're having a sharing multimedia without the web class. And so that should be really good, too. And that's about it for all of our classes.
Well, Mac Camp as I know, but you may want to tell the listeners, is not just about the classes.
Oh, no. Mac Camp is and always has been about people. And I tell people all the time, my first Mac Camp back in 1988 in the fall convinced me that it was a great place to go and meet people and learn things that I never thought that I would learn. Basically, I went there as a fairly well novice in the Macintosh world, moving over from the Apple IIe world, and came away just absolutely thrilled with new friends, new ideas, new ways of doing things. So Mac Camp really is about getting together with your fellow Mac users and learning from each other and making friends.
Charles, some of the topics you talked about, depending on how they're presented, could be beginner topics or they could be advanced topics. What level of experience are you shooting for or do you expect attendees to come in the door with?
Well, some classes we tell them up front that this class is definitely for the beginner and that you don't need any previous experience. Some classes like the Wacom tablet, we're expecting people that attend that class to know how to use their computer already, and they want to add information to it. Other classes like using fonts in System 10, taking the whole range of people that are just starting to use their Mac to the people that have been using their Mac for a long time, but fonts are still a mystery to them. Basically, we try to warn people up front what classes are going to be about. Digital camera classes. We don't care if you've just bought your camera or if you've had your camera for 10 years. There'll be something there for you. Same thing with sharing multimedia. Many new users come in. They go, hey, I keep sending these files to PC users and they can't open them. And we go over why they can't open them and how to solve that problem. So it's basically a fairly well mixture. We try to warn people who are getting into higher-end classes that they will need to have some experience with that class before they enter it, like Advanced Word or something like that. Other than that, most of the classes are open to everyone, and I encourage everyone to come to the classes, even if they feel the class is going to be a little bit over their head. If it's a class that really interests you, you're going to meet other people that hopefully you can call on later on and say, hey, I'm stuck. I know that you went to the class with me. Do you have any ideas how I can move past this point? And that is one of the big features of Mac Camp as far as I'm concerned. In fact, probably about half to three-quarters of the people that I'm friends with and we do things on a regular basis are friends from Mac Camp. So it's a good place to go and a good place to meet people and find that you have like interests and expand on those. Other than that, if you don't like the Macintosh and you don't like talking to people, you can come to Mac Camp and spend the entire weekend walking the trails at Silver Falls, going to the Seven Waterfalls. The scenery is beautiful at this time of year. The leaves are turning. Fall is here.
That always sounds so good. The Mac part sounds terrific. The facility and the photos that are online look terrific. This is not a commercial venture. This is produced by the Portland Macintosh Users Group. Involving Wacom and having them come in and show their tablets, is this the first time you've had any commercial involvement of that kind?
Well, it is, in a way, because we'd never thought to ask them. You know, they're next door in Vancouver, and you go, well, you know, it's a big company. They've got more and better things on their mind. But we invited them to a general meeting, and we mentioned Mac Camp to them, and basically the response we got was, well, sure, we can provide you with tablets, and we'll even provide an instructor for you. So a lot of times it's just the thing to ask. And I would never have thought about asking, except a member came up and said, gee, you know, that'd make a great Mac Camp class. And sure enough, it's going to make a great Mac Camp class.
Well, and the great thing, too, about tablets, I think that a lot of us have a perception that tablets are just for artists, and in fact, they aren't. They can serve so many different purposes, just as a completely configurable control surface, if nothing else. So that should be a very popular and very informative class.
Well, I'm hoping so. I view it as one of those things that it's an opportunity for people to see how things really work when you have a tablet on your desk and when you have somebody that's there to instruct you on how to get from point A to point B. Now, I'll honestly tell you how classes usually go. We take surveys after the class, and I will get 2 to 3 people say it went way too slow, two to three people that say it went way too fast, and the rest of the people will be in the middle saying that it was just fine. And if I get those reviews back, then I know it's been a successful class. Now, if I get something that all the reviews say, wished I'd have skipped that, we probably won't have that instructor back.
It sounds like your typical response to any user group meeting, that you're not going to be able to satisfy everyone. You're going to have some people that will love it and some people that it won't apply to. But if you can hit that middle range, you're doing pretty well.
Well, and the way that we look at it is we tell people, you know, if a class doesn't appeal to you and you're in the middle of that class, as long as you don't disturb the class, feel free to get up, go take a hike, go visit the class next door, see if it's something there appeals to you. We're not locked in iron here when we go out. On Friday night when I give the intro for the classes and have the instructors introduce themselves, one of the things that we pitch to the people is if they're changing their mind about what class they want to take, just let us know so that we can prepare for them.
Well, that kind of flexibility is great, that you don't require people to sign up and then they have to attend that class, and that they do have the flexibility to go out and enjoy the facilities.
Well, we get, you know, occasionally you get somebody there that after the instructor has spoken, they go, well, I didn't think that's what that class was about at all. I'd rather take the other one. And I shrug my shoulders and say, well, take the other one then. There's not a problem. And the instructors that we have are all volunteers. It's something that people don't understand. How can you do this as cheaply as you do it? Quite frankly, none of the volunteers get paid. They get their way to Mac Camp paid, and that is their only financial reward. So basically, we try to hold that line. Right now, we're charging $175 for Mac Camp, and that's up from a couple of years ago where we had it at $165, but it's only to match the inflation and the part of Mac Camp because, again, we want to focus it on people learning from other Mac users rather than professional instructors. I mean, sure, it would be nice to have professional instructors, but then I'd have to charge $300, $400, $500 for a weekend, where this way it's really reasonable considering that you get your meals from Friday night dinner to Sunday lunch plus a bed. You can't beat that deal for $175.
And you beat me to it. I wanted to make sure that the listeners knew what they got, because $175 is not an inexpensive consideration until you understand what all comes with it, and then it's a deal that can't be beat.
Exactly. And, you know, for those people who are local that maybe live in Salem or Silverton or one of the close areas there, and they say, hey, I want to go home, you know, maybe I only want breakfast and lunch, we write them their own little deal where, you know, for $65 they can come and take a class and have breakfast and lunch and go away if they want to. But that's not what we're about. We're really about, once we get you into camp, we really want you to be talking to the other users. We want you to be getting to know them, because that's really the experience. Learning how to use your computer with other computer users rather than having somebody hang over your shoulder and say, okay, now move your mouse over this icon and click twice.
And this Mac Camp starts on October 21st and runs through the 23rd, again at the Silver Falls State Park, just outside of Portland. If you want more information, please visit the Portland Macintosh Users Group website, and that's, Charles?
That is www.pmug.org. and that's all you need to do. And click on the Mac Camp on the left-hand side of your screen, and it'll take you to some of the classes for the current Mac Camp, plus pictures from previous Mac Camps, so you get an idea of what's been going on there. And this is twice a year, so if you miss it, and I know this is already the 20th, so there's probably a slim chance that anybody out there will hear this cast and be able to come. But if you think that you would like to attend, we have this in April, and it's going to be the 21st, 22nd, 23rd of 06 in April. And we also have it in October, so twice a year, every year.
And as Charles said, definitely check it out. You may not be able to make it this year, but this is a regular occurrence. And I think that if you go back and look at the pictures from some of the past years, you're going to want to go. I know I do. I keep trying to find a way to fit it into my schedule. Charles, thanks so much for talking to us. We really appreciate it. And as April gets closer, we'll have you back on and talk about what you have planned for that Mac Camp.
Okay, Jack.
Our guest has been Charles DeVore of the Portland Macintosh User Group. Again, the website is pmug.org. Charles, take care.
Thank you, Chuck.
To wrap up this edition of Mac Voices, we want to remind you that we have links in our show notes to everything Cindy mentioned, including the special offer for user group members to get 4 issues of X-Ray Magazine for free or for the cost of postage if you are outside the United States. In Mac User Group news, we want to mention that Dennis Sellers has started a new series of user group profiles over at Maximum News. Each week, Dennis will be looking at a different Mac user group around the globe. Be sure to visit Maximum News to see who's in the spotlight this week. If your group would like to be considered, you can email me or contact Dennis directly from the links on his website. Also, we want to congratulate the Hellenic Mac User Group, who will, for the 4th time, represent Mac user groups at Comdex Athens from November 18th to 20th. Not only will Hellmug have a stand on the show floor, but they've also scheduled several presentations and special events during the show. Look for the link to the story on the Mug Center in our show notes and see how the user group experience is truly a global one. I'd also like to invite you to listen and subscribe to the other podcast I'm involved with, and that's Mac Notables, the show with the Mac experts you want to hear from. New editions are being added all the time, both group discussions with members of the panel as well as individual one-on-one sessions about topics you will find both interesting and informative. You can get more information, including the subscription links, at macnotables.com. If you like what you heard on this show or have comments or suggestions, please drop me an email at chuck@macvoices.com or pick up the phone and call our talkback line at 206-350-1371. We had a great response to our first show and are always looking for feedback to make it better. And if you haven't subscribed yet, be sure to pick up our RSS feed from the Mac Voices website or visit the iTunes Music Store and search on Mac Voices. We don't want you to miss a single edition. Thanks to Cindy Schaffstall, the editor of X-Ray Magazine, for taking the time to educate us on what they have to offer and what's happening in the world of Quark. And thanks to Charles DeVore of the Portland Macintosh Users Group for updating us on the current iteration of Mac Camp. I'm Chuck Joyner. I want to thank you for listening, and I'll be back soon on another edition of Mac Voices.